This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Yvonne Murphy loves a good paradox. Take, for instance, the aviary. It simulates the natural habitat of birds, but it doesn't allow for their freedom. And we feel okay visiting because it's not a traditional cage, but it does keep the birds from flying away, as birds are meant to do. The paradox of cages for birds and people is one of the themes Yvonne Murphy puts in her first collection of poems called Aviaries. It's published by Wren Press here in Durham. Yvonne teaches writing at SUNY Empire State College in Syracuse, New York, and joins us now from her home outside the city. Yvonne, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Birds run throughout that book, throughout the, many of the poems, and yet many are also set in New York City, not famous for its birds, other than pigeons. Was that a paradox you were drawn to as well?
Well, yes. However, besides pigeons, there are a lot of other species of birds, mourning doves and sparrows, and that congregate in the city as well. So I think that there's a paradox inherent, maybe also an assumed, assumption about.
Right.
About that I'm very interested in kind of poking at assumptions.
Another paradox that runs through the book is the Mona Lisa, Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting, hangs in the Louvre in Paris. Tell us what attracts you to that.
Well, again, I'm very interested in, here is one of the most looked at or sought after faces in art history, and yet it's also very mysterious. It remains, she remains a very mysterious, unknown character. So it's just that kind of irony that intrigues me.
And not so much the mystery of her face, but for you, the inner life that we know so little about.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Would you read one of your... There are a number of poems about Mona Lisa. I wonder if you'd read one of them for us.
Absolutely. I'll read the first one that's in the book. It's called Mona Lisa. It's a mistake, this mystique. A technique of thin glazes. I look like I'm thinking. He used urine as a base for me. I won't tell you whose. He also used arsenic, built-in bomb. He thought he was a god. He could have been more generous. These hands in my lap, perpetual. I want a pet. I want a dog like the other girl got. Merde, I hate the Louvre. Pardon my French. Did I tell you? Everyone wants me. Enigma, c'est moi. All day, the tourists. I'm a girl forgotten by her womanly body. My robe is heavy. I need a nap.
The poem Mona Lisa, written by Yvonne Murphy in her latest collection, Aviaries. What cage is the Mona Lisa, or Mona Lisa herself? What cage is she trapped in?
Well, the frame, clearly the frame that is around, the border of her world, but also the glass box that covers her. And the history of the glass box is that, at one point, a man had tried to stab and slash the painting, and that's when the glass box was put over her. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of various barriers and various cages that she's enclosed behind.
It's interesting because when people see that painting or coffee mug or T-shirt or wherever they've actually encountered it, the mystery is what was Da Vinci up to? What did he mean? But you were drawn to something else, more about what who was she? What's her inner life?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Is that something, and in a way, that painting itself is something we've seen so much, we've completely lost any contact with it, don't you think? I mean, is that part of what draws you to this? The icon of the image is something that barely allows us access anymore. We've seen it so much.
And in a way, she's the quintessential objectification.
Mm-hmm.
She is this, and that's what I like to play with a lot, too, in her thinking, that she knows, she's no dummy, she knows she's an object. And she, she talks about that, and she, she is philosophical about that, and she's pissed off about it sometimes.
Would you consider the Mona Lisa poems feminist poems?
I would. I would, in the sense that, it's kind of, expressing a sense of being, seen and not always heard, and kind of the desire, the kind of, that women, for centuries have been the subjects of art, or the become the objects of art, and Mona would like to write, a ditty or two.
Do you consider yourself a political poet?
I consider myself a political person, and you know, and in that sense, I think politics will always inform my poems. I don't set out to, you know, to write a political poem when I set out to write, but I think that I'm very empathetic, you know, to the world. I'm an empath, and so I'm always the world is always coming through my poems.
You are very involved with Art Rage, a gallery in Syracuse. What kind of work do they exhibit?
You know, specifically political art and art by underrepresented, you know, groups and people, poster art that's protest poster art. Currently, they have a show up by the Just Seeds Collective out of the West Coast, specifically, you know, the Oregon, Portland, Oregon area, that is, you know, poster art that is kind of in the traditional style, protesting various environmental concerns like hydrofracking, which is a big issue in my area.
All right. Well, it's getting big here, too. Your book was selected to win a first book prize by Minnie Bruce Pratt.
Mm-hmm.
Her work overtly political, mm-hmm. and of course she's of a group of poets, a full generation ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Do you think your approaches are different?
You know, I think that there's a kindred spirit there. I think that there's no accident that she chose my book. I think that, you know, and I've been judging myself now some poetry contests, and it's very. It's, you tend to see a lot of books that are about oneself and one's own small world. And I, you know, like to write about issues and people and things and ideas in the larger world that, you know, how people are affected. And I think that is something that Minnie Bruce and I really share in common, you know, that she cares about people, and she writes about her current book is a fantastic example of that.
You're published by Carolina Wren Press,
yeah,
which is
yep.
here in Durham. How did you find each other?
Well, how did I find Carolina Wren Press?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was in Scotland, of all places, and I heard a wonderful poet, Evie Shockley, reading from her book of poems, recently published by Carolina Wren Press, and called The Half Red Sea. And I thought, well, that's a press that really is publishing striking, different, fresh, original work. And, you know, let me look into that. And so that's kind of how I came upon the press.
Will you read another poem for us?
Absolutely. This is a poem called Autogenic. It's really a poem about commuting. Autogenic. The expressway's shoulders hold no promise. Driving home, bound to road, purple asters bloom in the median. Late summer, time for harvest, release. The last of light evenings break through full, humid air. I cling to cheer. A poetic surface dilates, and expectations linger for more warm, long days. But darkness always tailgates, moving forward through subset's hazy debris. One truck has loosed a whole shipment of film. Celluloid ribbons flicker, tossed all over. They glisten and flutter past windows as commuters point themselves home. It's our lives as a movie, pouring out in thousands of stills, glossy trajectories recombined into alternate endings. An uncanny soundtrack blares. Autogenic, I process my own music of trees and bushes, asters and fireflies thickening to intermittent. Layers.
Yvonne Murphy reading from Aviaries, her latest collection, that one called Autogenic, and a well-timed sound effect. The car went by, as you said, an uncanny soundtrack blares. I don't know how you did it, Yvonne, but it's great radio. Keep it up.
I just have to tell you, by my window, just, you know, a few minutes before you called me, a horse and buggy. I live near Amish farms, and a horse and buggy went by my window.
Oh, that wouldn't have worked. We'd had to redo the whole. That's great. Well, you know, you do a lot. There's a lot of great imagery in all of your poems that are I think characterized by a couple of lines here. But darkness always tailgates. Mm. The sunset's hazy debris. Mm. The idea that that backgrounds, that things like darkness are animated. They said they take on a life of their own in some way.
And you can't get away from them. You just can't get away from it. Yeah. The mortality thing, yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, do you see another one, Sad Mona, which is one of the Mona Lisa plays. The first line is, she wonders if the background is seeping into her.
Mm-hmm.
Another verb, another animated background. Do you see things that way? Does darkness move for you? Does it come to life in that way? Only when you're in the moment, or is it something you construct? Do you sort of use that image while you're writing and editing? Is it something you have to work on, or does it grab you?
It's really how I experience the world, I have to say. I don't know what that says about me. A friend once said that I write happy Kafka poems, you know. But I just, you know, I tend to see things in a very... I'm also a visual artist, and I just, you know, I tend to see things just, you know, kind of the animated aspect of the natural world, mm-hmm. And the man-made world, of course.
Well, I do think Happy Kafka Poem should be the title of your next collection. That'd be just wonderful. You after you got your MA, you worked as a book editor acquiring first novels. How did you like that work?
I loved it. Well, I should say I absolutely loved working with the writers, the authors, and helping them, you know, take that big unwieldy manuscript and try to make it as strong as possible and as resilient as possible. And I have to say, though, I did not like the sales aspect of it. I did not like, you know, the whole sales conference and the, you know, promotion and, you know, all of that kind of business side of it.
Well, now you're teaching. Is that what you expected, the teacher's life?
Actually, that's why I decided to go into being a professor, as I realized it would be all of the talking about writing with none of the selling. and I love my life. You know, I always tell my students that, you know, I just never wanted to stop being in school. So I didn't.
Does it help you to teach? I mean, it's intuitive in some ways. If you're teaching, you're thinking more about it, it would make you a better writer. On the other hand, it can be intimidating and frustrating, I can think, to sort of think about the essence of a thing and say, you know what, I can't accomplish that either. What I've just taught is something I can't do. I don't know if you've experienced that sort of thing and if it's ever come up, or if teaching has just been very helpful to you as a writer.
Well, I have to say, I mean, the only way it's been unhelpful is just time, you know, just trying to find time to for quiet contemplation and writing. But I mean, when I encounter those amazing, magnificent poems that blow me away, for me, it's just a beacon to run toward. You know, I just, you know, it's a new mark to reach, and so I've always, you know, loved new challenges, and I get to talk about poetry, you know, all the time. And what could be better than that?
Not much, Yvonne. Thank you so much for talking about poetry with us.
Thank you.
Yvonne Murphy's new book is called Aviaries. And that's the State of Things for today. Thanks for listening. State of Things produced by Alex Granados and Sean Wen. Dixon Cruz is our intern. Robin Copley, the technical director. Managing editor, Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.